welcome to a very special post-loss edition of the fastest. Are we still calling it fastest 40 minutes when it's not quite basketball season, or?
Nobody stopped us yet.
Yeah, true. Okay, so welcome to a very special pissy edition of the fastest 40 minutes in podcasting. With me today, Ross and JJ, aka RPT and Uribe Auction, both on Skype from the same apartment, I believe.
Same room, actually.
Yeah, same room. It's kind of awkward.
Yeah, that's going to cause all sorts of echo problems, I'm sure. Okay, Ross, do you want to explain the clip we just heard to introduce this pissy podcast?
Yeah, we thought we'd carry over the tradition of the Darkness song, which is actually a time-honored and lore of tradition for the Dallas Stars dating back to 1993. Anytime an opponent scores, they play the Darkness music. The organization has since tried to get rid of it constantly, but the fans love/hate it, so just come to embrace the darkness and hope we don't have to hear it.
Embrace the darkness. All right. That gave me just enough time to eat a cookie, by the way, so thanks for that, too. You know you married a good woman when she makes you your favorite cookies after a loss.
Yeah, I guess we can't have the beef's wife deliver to us, can we?
No, that's a pretty tough little trip. All right, I think we've stalled long enough. Okay, we're going to go through the Missouri-Oklahoma State game tonight, just kind of quarter by quarter like we've done in the past. But first, I'm going to get this off my chest a little bit. I think, anyway, I handle losses overall better than most. I try to, anyway. I can handle when your team gets outplayed or when your team just makes the mistakes to lose the game, as they made plenty of mistakes tonight. But when the refs screw you, for whatever reason, that really, really, really sticks with me a lot longer than just a plain poor execution loss does. And I don't know if it would have made a difference in the game, but the three horrible calls in the second half really, well, like I said, they're sticking with me longer than they need to, especially since two of them involve the replay system. I love the replay system as much as anybody. And I think it absolutely has a place in college football, in football period, because, you know, it in theory prevents people from getting screwed. But when two calls, one of them that is pretty close and the other one that is obvious, the Jasper Simmons fumble was really close. The fumble at the end, even though it wouldn't matter, was very obviously a fumble once you look at it on replay. Both calls got confirmed by the replay official incorrectly both times.
That second one was the anti-Ron Prince. Instead of the screw it, we're staying here all night, that was the screw it, let's get out of here.
Yeah, pretty much. And again, it probably wouldn't have mattered, but you know, that's not very soothing, especially after you've gotten screwed by a couple calls already in the half. But look, if we're going to continue the replay system, and I hope we do, get the replay official a screen bigger than 10 freaking inches. Did you, like, twice, when they were doing both reviews, they flashed to the replay official in the booth, because that's gripping television, obviously. And he's looking at a screen smaller than the monitor I'm looking at right now.
Pretty sure he had to adjust the bunny ears, too.
Yeah, and, you know, this isn't hard. Get him, you know, we have a pretty nice-sized TV. You don't need some giant TV, but a nice little HD set, at least 30 inches big, to make these calls. And, you know, the right call, in theory, should be made at that point. But, no, we're still, it looked like a small computer screen that he was looking at. And I guess that makes it a little less surprising that he botched both calls. I got an email from Seth after the Jasper Simmons fumble. He thought it was really, really, really close.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Like, I still think it was a fumble. When they showed the view from the back, it certainly looked like his knee was down. I mean, I thought it didn't look like a fumble, excuse me. But anyway, there's absolutely no excuse to get a review wrong, and they got two wrong tonight, and that sticks with me. It makes me irrational, because it takes me, I start forgetting that Missouri dropped two humongously killer passes in the first half, and I start to blame the officials for everything, and that nobody wants that. That's the bitchy fan right there, and I try not to be that whenever possible. So,
and I think it's an incredibly valid point, but at the same time, we're also glossing over the fact that you cannot put this one on the officials, I don't think.
Right, again,
no, I don't think you can.
Missouri made enough mistakes, but then I get distracted by the refs, and it makes me irrational, and I don't like being irrational. Anyway, so at this point, I think we can walk through quarter by quarter, talk about, whatever we talk about as we go through it quarter by quarter. All right. 5 minutes in, we're finally talking about the actual game. So the game starts out in a kind of strange way for Missouri by the fact that they score on their opening possession for the first time since the Illinois game, go down a nice little 14-play drive, kick themselves a field goal, and go up 3-0. Then OSU turns around, drives 80 yards for a touchdown pretty easily. Keith Toston goes in from 11 yards out untouched, and it's 7-3. The teams trade a couple punts. Actually, no. They don't trade a couple punts. Blaine Gabbert, Missouri goes for it on fourth down and doesn't get it, and then OSU punts, and that brings us to the end of the quarter at 7-3 Oklahoma State. At this point, what were you guys' thoughts on how the game was unfolding?
You know, I didn't get to see the first drive, and I walked in literally as I think Russell's kick was going through the uprights. I'm getting some serious echo and some serious mic noise here. So
yeah,
I fight through this.
I hear the mic noise. Keep talking.
All right. So, just play by play, going back and looking through it, and knowing what we know now, I mean, did you expect the kind of fallout and fall apart that we saw as the game wore on, given what happened in the first drive, especially given that this Missouri team hadn't exactly started hot before?
Well, I think the most noticeable thing about the first drive was the fact that they said before the game that, you know, Gabbert's ankle really was pretty tender, pretty bad. They taped the crap out of it, and they they were worried about his accuracy a little bit. And sure enough, like, every single pass on the first drive was high. When you're throwing high to Denaire Alexander, it doesn't matter because he catches it anyway. But, it was a nice drive, but he threw high to Jared Perry twice. He threw, I think it was Derek Washington as well. And he did not ever look comfortable throwing the ball. And it's funny saying that considering he had 250 yards passing in the first half. But it was absolutely the case. It was just OSU was playing really soft. They were really kind of uncomfortable as far as when they wanted to blitz. Missouri could do whatever they wanted to in the first half until they got down to the red zone, of course. It was nice to get points on the board, and things looked pretty good after the first drive. Second drive, turnover on downs, that really wasn't that bothersome. And they ended the first quarter driving on Oklahoma State again. So overall, I was very pleased just for the fact that this is a slow starting team. Their quarterback couldn't really step into a pass very well. And, they're trailing 7-3, driving the ball when the quarter ended. I was pretty much okay with that.
And pretty vindicating for the offensive line, too.
Yeah, the line really looked, it didn't look as good in the second half, obviously. But I thought the line played fine today, considering how immobile Gabbert was, considering he still leaves the pocket too early sometimes. I thought, he didn't get hit a whole lot, and that was kind of what you wanted to see. JJ, any thoughts?
I think you guys covered it all. You two are the experts here. I'm not going to say anything bad about Gabbert because, again, he's a sophomore with a bum ankle.
Yeah.
And if anyone really thinks that Gabbert sucks and then, needs to be replaced, then they're just an idiot and probably should, not be. They should have their Mizzou fan card revoked if those exist.
They exist. Trust me. we'll come back to you after the game with some Mizzou volleyball analysis.
Oh, sweet.
So you can feel like there was something in your wheelhouse, too. Okay, so second quarter starts with Mizzou capping a nice drive with some nice rushes. Devin Moore had some really pretty strong carries tonight. And then Derek Washington takes it in from the one, and Missouri goes up 10-7. OSU goes three and out. Mizzou goes three and out. OSU goes three and out again. Or no, they complete one pass and then go three and out. So it's 10-7 Missouri about halfway through the second quarter when Missouri starts to defeat itself. Gabbert throws a little slant to Jarrell Jackson, which was not perfectly on target, but, you're getting paid to play wide receiver, basically through 4 years of college. You have to catch that pass. And it goes through his hands, right into the hands of Lucien Antoine, who returns it for a touchdown. And despite the fact that Missouri's been really dictating the play of the game, it's 14-10 Oklahoma State. So Missouri gets the ball back. We're kind of curious how they're going to handle adversity. Well, they go straight down the field. get a couple first downs, and then Denaire Alexander, who was so freaking good today, goes 48 yards for a touchdown, despite getting just the crap face masked out of him there at the end of the play. And so Missouri goes up 17-14 with 6 minutes left in the game. Parrish Cox, who just terrifies me. This is the last time we'll ever have to see him. Cox takes the ensuing kickoff 50 yards to midfield. Oklahoma State goes down and kicks a field goal, and it's 17 all. And then, then the end of the half happens. Another huge drop by West Kemp. When it first happened, I thought maybe he alligator armed it, and because he was still worried that Dominican Sue was going to hit him from somewhere. But it was just, Blaine Gabbert on a bum ankle, escapes a little bit of pressure, steps into it, heaves it about 60 yards down the field, and it just goes straight through Kemp's hands. Like, he just closes his hands at the wrong time. Ugh. And so instead of Mizzou having the ball inside OSU's 40, they punt it, and Jake Harry, as Bulls run, or somebody's typing or something in the background.
Yeah, JJ, I think that's you typing.
No, keep it up, as long as I know what it is. Okay. So instead of Missouri having the ball in really good territory on OSU's side of the field, Jake Harry gets a punt off, and you can tell how spoiled we are by the rugby punts getting about 30 yards worth of roll. His first two punts today bounced sideways or backwards, and OSU was set up very well. They go down, and on the last play of the first half, they throw a little 8-yard slant route for a touchdown, which was a nice little dagger going into halftime. So despite the fact that Missouri had outgained Oklahoma State by, I think, almost 150 yards, or 100 at least. I don't remember what the total was in the end. At one point, they'd outgained them 300 to 150. Despite outplaying Oklahoma State in the first half, the two drops were just daggers, and OSU goes into halftime up 24-17. So
I'll be interested to see if Dr. Saturday has this as one of his life at the margins.
Yes. Yeah. He better.
Just because it's in swing yards, wasted yards, points off turnovers, everything that determines games at the margins. Not only would this game, I don't want to say it would have switched sides in terms of win or loss, but 16 points is pretty, what's the word I'm looking for? Bill, help me out here.
Damaging? I don't know.
We'll go with that.
It's one of those situations, in the same way with the OU-Texas game earlier today. OU at halftime had severely outgained Texas, had just outplayed them. They set the tempo, they set the pace, they dominated Texas on defense, and it was 6-3 at halftime. And it's kind of a, glass half full, half empty situation. Half full, you think, we've outgained them so far, we'll continue to do so, and eventually it'll even out and we'll win the game. Or we've probably been overachieving a little bit, with how much we've outgained them to this point, and it's probably going to backfire on us big time. And for both OU and Missouri today, it backfired. And boy, Kemp, that hurts so bad. Like, it was what's becoming a prototypical Blaine Gabbert play: escape the pocket on third and long, and just heave it as far as you can, especially to Kemp. And boy, that one hurt. So. Yeah, so going into the locker rooms, Missouri's down 7. Obviously the game's still extremely winnable. They ran well. They passed. They sort of passed well. Gabbert's 12 for 24 for 260 at halftime, and you realize that he's horribly inaccurate, and it could have probably been 18 for 24 if he had been able to step into passes fully. And he's two drops away from having like 360 yards passing at halftime.
And I brought this up in the thread. Before the season, you and I both agreed that we figured they probably pretty methodical but not explosive, and we're getting almost the exact opposite.
Yep. I was hoping you were going to talk longer. I put another cookie in my mouth. So
I'm having to deal with some crazy echo here. That's throwing me off my game.
Yeah, well, everybody's been throwing off their game today, so it's okay.
Best fault.
Yep. So going into the third quarter, the goal was, get a stop from Oklahoma State on Oklahoma State, and just start trying to, do what you did in the first half. They ran well and they passed well, all things considered. And, You know, you just hope that that keeps up. If Missouri's defense can continue to play well, and they did, that, you know, the game will turn out okay. Well, it didn't quite work out that way. Oklahoma State does indeed go 3 and out. They have a false start and a holding penalty on the first drive of the second half. And they end up getting it to their 48-yard line before they punt. And so Mizzou gets the ball at their 14-yard line. This is a trend for the entire second half. Get the ball at 14, a couple incomplete passes. Blaine Gabbert looked really cold. Like, he just went in at halftime and his ankle completely stiffened up. Suddenly, he was not very accurate again. He threw behind Jared Perry. On third down and 10, he heaves it deep to Alexander, but Parrish Cox, who is, you know, a damn good cornerback, picks it off. Not really a damaging turnover because, you know, Jake Harry wasn't punting that well anyway. It ended up being basically a 34-yard punt. So that's not a huge deal, but once again, OSU starts around midfield. They go 3 and out again, but they once again pin Missouri deep at their 14, where Missouri goes 3 and out, punts again, and OSU starts at midfield again. You just know this can't continue. Eventually, OSU is going to put a drive together and get on the board. So that's what happens. Zach Robinson on the following drive, really, you know, I felt so bad for the defense. They try to flea flicker. Missouri didn't fall for it at all. They flush Robinson from the pocket, and he just kind of heaves a desperation pass 20 yards downfield to a tight end for a first down. Another first down later, OSU kicks a field goal. So after a series of punts and 3 and outs, it's halfway through the third quarter. It's 27-17 Oklahoma State. Still within reach if Missouri can get things going. Missouri gets one first down and has to punt again after what it was the first of three egregious calls. Missouri's down 10. They need to get on the board. Jasper Simmons rips off an 88-yard kickoff return to the Oklahoma State 10-yard line, except a holding penalty is called. They show a replay, and I want to go back and look at that again just because I really want to see a hold somewhere.
I can't find it, and you know me. I try to give as much benefit of the doubt as possible.
I'm hoping you drew up some screenshots. You had some screenshots ready if there was a hold.
The bar is set, Ross.
Exactly. But it doesn't happen. Basically, what ends up being almost an 80-yard penalty, and once again, for the third straight drive, Mizzou starts at the 14-yard line.
We still haven't had a first down at this point in the quarter.
We had not done a single thing. And that was just, you know, I just hate, you know, again, it probably didn't matter. OSU was already up 10. None of these calls probably changed the course of the game, but you'd just love to see Missouri at least get some points on the board then. Instead, they get one first down. They punt again. Once again, it's a bad kick by Harry. Fair catch by Parrish Cox at near midfield. And the fourth quarter starts with Oklahoma State up 10 inside Missouri territory. You were just waiting at this point for the Missouri defense to just kind of give out, basically. And to their credit, they really never did. They gave up a couple first downs. just because this is the luck of the game here. On 4th and 8 from Missouri's 29, they try a 46-yard field goal. They miss it, but the whistle blew as the ball was being snapped because OSU was called for a delay of game. Obviously, you can't decline a delay of game. And on the next play, Quinn Sharp or Dan Bailey boots a 51-yard field goal straight through the uprights. And at this point, you know, you're holding that hope, but wow, I mean, you just had two special teams plays go horribly against you, one because of refs, one just because of dumb, stupid luck, and it's 30-17 Oklahoma State.
Like last year with the Oklahoma State game in Stillwater, where you see a sure interception go through a defensive back's hands right to Jermaine Gresham, who runs the remaining, 50 yards, and you just think, dude, this isn't going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, there's dumb luck. Every single team in the country has dumb luck games, and Missouri's been...
Minus Mizzou in 2007.
Yeah, I was going to say, and even then there was, you know, pigs dropped interception, the ball going through. Not nearly as much dumb luck, but there's still some. And I guess that's what makes football great and just terrifyingly frustrating at the same time. But so at this point, two special teams, bad luck things have gone against Missouri. And then Jasper Simmons fumbles the kickoff. Or does he? When you watch the replay, you can't completely tell at first whether his knee is down before he fumbles. But, you know, the one replay, I think it was from the end zone angle. It sure looks like not only is he down, but that the ground actually ended up causing the fumble. So they review it, and then basically on the live blog, I pretty much say, you know, well, this one's, you know, most likely going to get overturned because it's pretty clearly a fumble. It's not overturned. It's confirmed. And with, excuse me, with 14 minutes left in the game, OSU is handed 3 points. Missouri's defense stiffens up again and forces a 3-and-out and forces a field goal. But that was 3 points for Oklahoma State that, you know, would have mattered had Missouri ever scored again, but it didn't, obviously. So Missouri gets the ball back, goes down the field, and, you know, gets 4th and 1 from the Oklahoma State 21. And at this point, a vast majority of sports fans in general, especially those who haven't found outlets on blogs, I think, when your team loses, you have to find somebody to blame. And so, you know, it can't just be that you got beat. It has to be that the offensive coordinator sucks, or the play calling was terrible, or the coaching was bad, or whatever. The coaches have to be to blame for a loss. And in this case, you know, if the only problems I had all night with David Yost's play calling was the fact that you're halfway through the fourth quarter, you're down two possessions, and that's fine. You got to pass more often than not. But on 4th and 1, on 3rd and short, you can still run the ball. And 3rd and 1 from Oklahoma State's 21, empty backfield, Gabbert throws incomplete. A dropped pass, actually, by Alexander, really his only drop of the night, I think. Or at least his only unjustifiable drop. He had a couple in coverage. And then on 4th and 1, another empty backfield and another incomplete pass. And at this point, it's not looking good. 7:34 left, Oklahoma State's up 16. Missouri forces another punt. And I gotta golf clap this one. One of the prettiest punt return trick plays you're ever going to see. Quinn Sharp boots a huge punt, backs Carl Geddes up. He returns for a couple yards, and as he's getting tackled, he hands off to Jasper Simmons, who goes down the sideline 58 yards. Simmons has good speed on returns. I'm not sure he has many moves. He didn't even really try to get out of the way of the punter. But
he's a straight line guy.
Yeah, but no, I mean, no real complaints. They get the ball inside the Oklahoma State 20 immediately, and if they can score real quick, technically they might still have a chance. After a quick pass to Alexander, empty backfield. 2nd and 3 is an empty backfield incompletion. 3rd and 3 is an empty backfield incompletion. And on 4th and 3, they finally put Washington in the backfield, and everybody knows he's going to run. And he gets stuffed, and that's pretty much ball game at that point. Missouri gets the ball back, and Gabbert goes deep and throws an interception. Then Keith Toston fumbles. They decide, you know, screw it, let's get this game over with. And blah, 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 blah. Missouri loses.
Yeah.
That took 18 minutes, by the way, to go through the entire game.
That was actually pretty rapid without Beef telling us to wrap it up.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, Seth, if you're listening, you know, we got you. We're good without you now.
You're welcome.
Yeah. All right. So just in general, you know, I hate that the officiating played any role at all, but in the end, it really cost Missouri, 3 to 7 points on the kick return that got called back, 3 points on the terrible review. And then, you know, who knows, maybe points, maybe not at the end. So that's, you know, 7 to 10 points, something like that. They lost by 16. It probably doesn't matter. So that being said, I guess Ross, we'll start with you. What do you take away from this game looking forward for the rest of the year?
Almost that Missouri beat Missouri again tonight, and that don't take credit away from Oklahoma State. That's a good football team, and they minimize mistakes, and that's really all you can ask for the most part. But, I mean, last year, didn't it feel like Missouri got beat, whereas this year Missouri just couldn't get out of its own way?
Yeah, I mean, last year there was the one horrible interception by Chase Daniel, the second one, where he just goes straight down the middle of the field to nobody. And, you know, dumb luck involved with the ball bouncing off Denario Alexander's head. But, Oklahoma State last year, they had a great defensive game plan. They messed with Chase Daniel's head, and it really was an impressive effort. This time, yeah, they didn't make mistakes, and that won them the game. And, you know, compliments to them for that, but it wasn't when the other team didn't just straight out, you know, come up and beat you, then you start looking in the mirror a little bit. And the first half, those two drops, you cannot have two just more painful drop passes than the one by Jarrell Jackson and the one by Wes Kemp. And at that point, it kind of defined the game.
That was a 14-point swing, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, the first one was, you know, handing 7 points to Oklahoma State. The second one, you know, number one, even if Missouri doesn't score after that bomb to Kemp, they at least run out most of the clock, and OSU probably doesn't come down and score the touchdown. So, yeah, that's handing Oklahoma State 14 points.
In a two-score ball game.
Correct. So it was like I said, at halftime, you want to paint the rosy picture that they did outgain Oklahoma State, and if they keep it up, they can win. And they did outgain Oklahoma State for the game, too. But, boy, yeah, those are just daggers, especially when you think about next year with Danera Alexander and Jared Perry being gone. Jared Perry, who had one of the worst, just the most bad luck games you'll ever see. Every single time Gabbert threw to him, it was too high or behind him, and he just got hit every single time. But
does somebody want to send Nario's tape to Marcus Lucas?
Yeah, seriously.
What kind of position will be available next year?
Exactly. Starting next year, that is correct. It would be him versus LaDainian Washington for the Denario position.
People.
Yeah, yep. And Marcus Lucas is pretty skinny, too, so
yeah,
might not really be able to tell them apart. But
hey, perspective. It's a young football team.
Yeah.
That will make mistakes.
And you know, this was, like I said, it sucks that, you know, I pretty much accepted that chances are we weren't going to win this game, and then we lost in a really annoying way, and that always happens, and I hate that. But go ahead.
I was just going to say, this is something you brought up in the thread. How frustrating is it wasting some of the defensive performances that we've had?
I mean, you just hope that if not against Texas next week, which, you know, I mean, if Denaro's or somebody goes crazy, then, you know, who knows? Maybe an upset's possible. But really, just down the line, you hope that the defensive play that's taking place right now continues once Missouri gets into the easier half of their schedule. And let's face it, after next week, the five remaining games are at Colorado, who they definitely seem to be improving. I'll absolutely give them that. They beat Kansas today. They led a sleepwalking Texas team at halftime, but, you know, they've been making a lot more plays lately, but they're still freaking Colorado. Kansas State, you know, they looked good today, but they're still Kansas State. Missouri has more talent and speed than both of them. They get Iowa State at home, and they get Kansas, who, speaking of sleepwalking, they get Kansas to end the season in Arrowhead. Those, and one more that I'm forgetting. Oh, Baylor, yeah. Can't forget Baylor at home.
Yeah.
That's five extremely winnable games. And so, moving on from this week, going through next week, win or lose against Texas, probably lose, obviously, but, you know, it's football. You never know, I guess. All the bad bounces that we got, you know, could go to Texas next week. Stick together. Show signs of improvement. Keep playing well on defense. Just stick together. And on the last five games of this season, you are bigger, stronger, and faster than every single opponent you play, except maybe Kansas.
Yeah.
And that's, I guess, we're all in agreement here, so all we're going to do is say I agree and pat each other on the back, and the rest of the fan base might look at things a little differently, I guess, but,
Blaine Gabbert's ankle and David Yost's head are on a platter right now.
Yeah.
For most fans.
And it does, Gabbert's ankle has been kind of, you know, we knew that chances are if Gabbert gets hurt and is out, this team, the expectations for this team take a tremendous shift downward, because Jimmy Elvis Costello just isn't, well, he's at least not nearly as good as Blaine Gabbert is on one leg. And, but Blaine Gabbert with one leg, you do wonder what could have happened last week or this week if he had just been a little more accurate. If he, you know, could step into those out routes last week and the one doesn't get picked off on the sideline. And if he can not overshoot every single receiver for most of the first half while passing for 259 yards, maybe Missouri builds enough of a lead to where it doesn't matter in the second half. But, you know, I don't know.
I know the guy's got a strong enough arm, and maybe I've been watching too much Price is Right commercials, but can we get the dude a power chair?
I was hoping you'd make a Plinko reference there, but I don't know how you would have fit that in. But, yeah, no, it does. Missouri's not had very good luck with injuries this year. Nobody, knock on wood, nobody's been out for the season. But, I mean, Gabbert's ankle, Devin Moore's ankle, and apparently Andrew Jones is fighting invisibility at the moment. And then, you know, Will Ebner on defense. There have been some pretty key players getting banged up right now.
Well, and then don't forget Geddes on the Niles ball play.
Yeah, he missed about three plays in that game, and one of them was the dagger. So, yeah, injuries have not gone our way. I really hope that kind of stops at some point. But, Yeah, no, I mean, it's pretty clear we pretty much agree here. Just this is a very young team that really, all things considered, responded very well to the gut-wrenching loss last week. I mean, they were clearly in it mentally. Being in a funk was not the problem today. They came out and scored. They vastly outgained Oklahoma State in the first half. You just kind of hope that if next week or later on in the season, if there's another close game heading into the late third quarter, early fourth quarter, that they can step it up again like they did against Bowling Green, like they did against Nevada. And, just keep it together, keep the good chemistry going, and just start making plays after next week. Anyone?
Beeler? I'd say I have more to add, but we probably need to wrap this thing up.
Yeah, okay.
we've got a week to discuss this.
Yeah, I just this was a very frustrating loss, but I do hope that everybody just kind of keeps perspective a little bit in the fact that, you know, never mind that 2010 still looks really, really damn good, which was kind of like we were saying at the beginning of the year, that was the number one goal for 09 is don't screw up 2010 and 2011 technically, since everybody will return in 2011, aside from maybe Blaine Gabbert, you know, who the hell knows about that, but
yeah.
Long-term, this program still looks good. Every team in the country suffers really stupid, dumb luck losses sometimes, and that's all I got. It's late, and this was a very fun, a very entertaining game of football, but pretty much every rooting interest I had today lost, and it's starting to, by the end of the day, it gets kind of a annoying. At least Nebraska lost, and Kansas, I guess, you know, there are positives. Yeah. Missouri losing today also, I believe, ruined a five-way tie at 1-1 in the North.
Yeah, it would have been a five-way tie for second.
No, it would have been a six-way tie because Iowa State beat Baylor today.
No, K-State's 2-1.
Oh, that's right there, that stupid extra game. Never mind.
Yeah, Farmageddon. Yeah, K-State, meet the new leaders atop the Big 12.
Yeah, this was a really weird day, especially in the Big 12.
Yeah, especially in the Big 12, but I mean, even across the nation, just kind of an odd day.
And at least, you know, as ripped off by the officials as we feel right now, at least we're not Arkansas.
We won't get into that.
No. So all right, Uribe, JJ, I said that, tell us how Missouri volleyball looked real today. I'd say this has put a nice little positive spin on the end of the podcast, but they lost.
Well, if we're looking for a positive, Paula Ampudia picked up 21 kills on 61 attempts. They were set for all game. And it was mainly because Juliana Klein was out. I would say that I'm saying ump way too much.
Yeah, that's very welcome on this podcast. Makes me feel better.
Too much articulation. Paolo Amphia, I'm very interested to see if they're going to keep her playing out of the back row when Juliana Klein comes back, because she looked so good coming out of the back row. I mean, she, like, her jump angle is just incredible. And I realize that when I do hand motions on video, it doesn't have the same effect. But just imagine about, like, a 60-degree angle. She just comes flying in. And I don't think Missouri's had a hitter with that kind of leaping ability, at least an outside hitter. Coach Krekel said she can touch 10-3, which is... Brittany Burbage can touch 10-6, but she's a middle. So if they can keep her in the back row and keep setting her up for her to just come flying in, she'll have a lot of success, and Missouri will score a lot of points once Juliana comes back.
So today's 3-1 loss against Nebraska ended a pretty decent-sized home winning streak. They've been obviously good at home, okay on the road, I guess. At this point, what do you think their NCAA tournament chances are?
I think they're pretty good. If they finish above 500 in the Big 12, which is an insanely tough league, I think that they'll have a very good chance to make it in.
Okay.
Had they not won a couple of non-conference games, like against BYU, they probably wouldn't have as good of a chance. But right now, they stole that one against A&M. That's huge.
Yeah.
If they can pull off a win, you know, against Kansas, Oklahoma, Baylor. Well, they can beat Baylor. That'd be huge. They're probably not going to beat Texas. I shouldn't be saying that, but, you know, they probably won't. And if they can find a way to steal a couple more games at home and maybe only lose two or three, there, I think they're a lock for the tournament.
It does seem like the Big 12 has a good enough reputation that, yeah, if you can finish over 500 and not just completely pee yourselves in non-conference play, then you're most likely going to get in. And, you know, we miss having the, you know, the Vanderkoys and the Lindsey Hunters back there and not just fighting for a tournament bid, but actually fighting for a high seed and home and, you know, hosting a regional, all that. I'd love to get back there. Maybe next year. It sounds like, you know, it seems like a whole hell of a lot of talent is coming back next year.
Yeah, I'll only be losing Amanda Hantuli and Lei Wong. They're already working Kay Harrison at center.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to miss a whole lot there. I mean, that's nothing against Lei. I think it's going to be fine. And when you bring back Paola, Jules, Rosa, Katie, the whole back row, that they're going to be really good next year.
It is funny, we mentioned this, I think, a few months ago after basketball season, but it does really seem like all of the Missouri programs are building for really good things in 2010 and 2011. But you just have some growing pains years like this, and, you know, it'd be nice if Missouri can still, you know, go, you know, the 8-4, 9-3 area that it sure seems like they should be able to pull off this year. It'd be nice if Missouri volleyball can make the tournament, if Mizzou basketball can make the tournament again. But yeah, it's hard to think about the big picture at all times, but this is really a good setup for Mizzou athletics right now. We just have to fight through a growing pains year here.
We got to remember too that we've gone through two of the most successful years in Mizzou history at 07 and 08.
It's really
rabble.
It's really hard for a fan base, any fan base, to have success and not expect the same level of success at all times. You know, once it's happened, why can't it ever not happen? You know, or why can't there, that was like a quadruple negative. Whatever I'm trying to say, fan bases, big picture, rabble. Evening kickoff next week. Speaking in fragments. Anybody have anything to add before we wrap it up at almost exactly the fastest 40 minutes?
Black and gold game for basketball is Friday. Look out for Steve Moore. That's all I got to say.
We'll get into some serious Mizzou basketball preview talk here in a while. We'll behind the scenes, we'll get that set up.
It is, I've got to say, just so funny. Like 12 months ago, right now, even after a couple losses from Mizzou football kind of killed the football season, or at least, you know, the major aspirations of the football season, there was a joke of, well, hey, at least it's almost basketball season. Ha, 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 ha.
I made that joke.
Yeah, I think a lot of people made
Oklahoma State loss.
Yeah, I think a lot of people made that joke before football season was over. And now every single time I think of the basketball team, even though they're probably not going to be as good this year, I just kind of smile. Like, there's such a high personality and likability level with this basketball team that it's really, really hard to not enjoy the thought of watching them play again, even if they're not quite as good this year. So,
completely agree.
There we go. Everybody agrees. All right. Well, we're at the 39-minute mark. We're going to wrap this up. We will try to, since we had demand for podcasts this week. That's always lovely to see. We'll try to knock a few more of these out as time goes by here. But
and we'll have a post game next week.
Yep, that's true.
Live and in person.
Assuming it's not, you know, icy or rainy or something. Knock on wood.
Crossed.
So, all right, let's wrap this up for the 17th time. We'll talk to you guys next week in big picture.
Perspective, positivity,
etc. Go Tigers.
Farewell.
Every now and then I get a little bit lonely and you're never coming round.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit tired of listening to the sound of my tears.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit nervous that the best of all the years have gone by. Every now and then I get a little bit terrified and then I see the look in your eye.
feel.